This is the November 11th, 2022 morning session of the Portland City Council. Good morning, Keelan. Please call the roll.
Good morning. Maps?
Here.
Rubio?
Here.
Ryan?
Here.
Hardesty? Wheeler?
Now I'll turn it over to legal counsel for the rules of order and decorum.
Thank you, Commissioner Maps. Welcome to Portland City Council. City Council is holding hybrid public meetings with in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on the council clerk's webpage at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or the first readings of ordinances. Written testimony may be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once council clerk calls your name. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Thank you.
Thank you. First up is communications. Item 932, please.
Request of Hazel R. Dennis to address council regarding fraud concerns and homelessness. They canceled their request.
Okay. Item 933, please.
Request of Portland Advocates for Lead-Free Drinking Water to address council regarding Water Bureau and lead and tap water crisis. They also canceled their request.
Great, thank you. Item 934, please.
Request of Michelle Stevenson to address council regarding gun violence reduction ideas.
Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, you're coming through loud and clear.
Great. Hello, my name is Michelle Stevenson. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a community member and speak for myself. I'm here to argue against the implementation of ShotSpotter in the city of Portland. I think gun violence is a very serious problem, and it is something I've been exposed to both living in Portland and abroad. I've been shot at, I've been threatened. When I lived in Guatemala, I worked at a women's shelter where most of the women and children have been victims of gun violence or been witness to serious homicides, often femicide. The shelter I worked at served as a witness protection for some family relations of cartel members. These women were actively testifying to bring cartel members to justice and lived in constant fear because they stood against powerful forces. My experiential resume is important to note because I want each one of you to understand that I know gun violence is very, very serious and real. I stand for gun violence reduction ideas that work. I believe that a gun buyback program would help reduce gun violence, and I fully support a gun buyback program. I support getting guns out of the hands of our youth and vulnerable men and some cash into their hands to give them a chance, a boost up, so that they can get out of dangerous situations that they might be in. $1,000 would mean the world to some of these young folks. It could change their entire trajectory for the better. Instead of getting locked into a cycle of violence and revenge, they could escape and start new, minus only their guns, the tool that often traps them in unhealthy cycles. I have read a great deal on ShotSpotter. I am worried about civil rights infringements from using ShotSpotter, and without a full data release from ShotSpotter, I cannot say one way or another if it will work to reduce gun violence. The data I saw on Doliak's Justice Tech Lab page, which was copiously quoted by ShotSpotter salespeople, was a public records release from the city governments. It included time and triangulation of ShotSpotter 911 calls of sounds believed to be gunshots. There is absolutely no data on outcome. All I know from Doliak's data is that 911 was called by ShotSpotter X amount of times. Doliak's claim that ShotSpotter works is held by the data she was working off of. and therefore cannot be taken seriously. In one of the meetings with FitCog, Stephanie Howard mentioned that she was studying Oakland's ShotSpotter program as a similar city with reported positive outcomes from ShotSpotter implementation. As an aside, I dispute that the downtick in violence in Oakland in the timeframe mentioned had to do with ShotSpotter. I believe it had to do with gentrification and flux in population and housing stability. But I did go to Oakland as a result. I'm sending a copy of this speech to CC Testimony with a link to the article referencing this, but Brian Hofer of the Oakland Privacy Commission stated that in their ShotSpotter contract, ShotSpotter owns the data. This appears to be consistent across contracts in different cities. I wonder if the real serious money for ShotSpotter comes from the data gathered from microphones placed in public city areas. It isn't clear what they do with the gathered data. Who can listen to it within ShotSpotter? Do they aggregate companies to different countries? ShotSpotter, in response to civil rights queries, doesn't release some data of their recording to the police, but that doesn't mean they don't sell the data to third parties. They would own that data. They would have the legal right, unless the contract states otherwise, in a legally airtight way. This is not unlike fake. Do you need me to stop? I'm so sorry. I am running over.
Michelle, you are a little bit over time. I want to thank you for this really excellent testimony, and I would invite you to submit this testimony to council so we can read it all the way to the end. Thank you.
Absolutely do. Thank you very much.
Sure, of course. Please come back. Next up, we have item 935.
Request of Kelsey Schreiner to address council regarding affordable housing.
Welcome, Kelsey.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Let me pull up my testimony really quick. Okay. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Kelsey Schreiner. I am one of the tenants who received rent increases over $400 and the leader of the Prescott Multi-Tenants Union. I was not invited to last week's work session, nor were any of my neighbors or the lawyers and advocates who helped us successfully resist our rent increases and helped us in understanding the complexity and broken policies of the laws that allowed them to happen in the first place. It was very frustrating sitting through the work session, not only because the only person invited to testify with lived experience was an affordable housing landlord who has paid thousands of dollars at his milepost five tenants for his repeated violation of landlord-tenant laws, but because 3 months ago I was a busy single mom working several part-time jobs and attending school full-time. The last couple of months, I've been forced to quickly master local and state landlord-tenant policies and watching you all trying to describe the issue felt like I was watching a 90-year-old play basketball. Why is it okay that the only people who are allowed to make decisions significantly impacting housing stability and therefore lives of nearly 50% of Portlanders have no expertise and lived experience in the subject? Commissioners Rubio, Hardesty, and Mabs, here are the facts that Ryan and PHB either don't understand or don't want you to know. Reason we could get $400 rent increases is because the median family income. It isn't because the building is 15 years old. It isn't because COVID protections are ending or because the federal government hasn't sent more rent assistance money. It is because the city made a deliberate decision to allow affordable housing landlords to issue MFI increases. When MFI increases X percentage, the maximum allowable rent is allowed to go up X percent. Last year, MFI went up 10%. Over the last 5 years, MFI in Portland metro areas has gone up 40%, which means max rents for affordable housing has two. This is more than inflation and more than market rate have increased by every metric. Because these MFI increases can be significant, the state limit of rent increases on affordable to 5%. For some reason, the city of Portland intentionally decided not to do this. Last week, PHB gave you the impression that the problem had been fixed. After 2018, this is false. The 2018 memo exempts all multi and inclusionary housing from 5% policies, regardless of when it was built. We have independently confirmed with PHB that every single IH unit is vulnerable to the exact same type of increase. You want to blame the 15-year exemption, which is also a problem, but that would still have allowed a 9.9% increase, which is still way too high for low-income people living in affordable housing. MFI goes up because rich people move here and poor people get forced out, not because our wages go up. MFI increases are nothing more than a gentrification bonus. It is also a problem that multi-affordability expires after 10 years and the city has no plan for the tidal wave of displacement that will crest in the next couple of years. Many of my neighbors, including myself, have experienced homelessness, and it is not an exaggeration to say that that's where many will be again if city council doesn't address the problem. How can it be fixed? If you can't impose a 5% cap, then you need to pass relo policy that applies specifically to affordable housing inventory. Rent increase trigger should be 5% and relo amount should reflect the real cost of relocating from affordable housing to market rate housing. The landlord should be required to give clear information about our rights and not deceptive information like our landlord gave us to trick us out of relo. Last week, Mayor Wheeler said passing relo was divisive, but it passed unanimously and saved thousands of people overnight. Renters are half of when landlords aren't the other half.
Kelsey, I'm going to shut you off here. You're about 30 seconds over time. We very much appreciate your testimony today. And if you have any of that written down, I encourage you to submit it to the city clerk so we can share your comments in full with everyone on council. Thank you. Next, I believe we have item 936.
Request of Mike Schreiner to address council regarding affordable housing and multiple unit limited tax exemption program.
Welcome, Mike.
Commissioner Mapps, that's actually my dad, and he was here to testify and he had troubles getting in. If I could finish my testimony in his place, I would really appreciate that.
Sure, fair enough. Why don't you, we'll let you fill in for Mike, 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. To finish my last part, last week Mayor Wheeler said passing relo was divisive, but it passed unanimously and saved thousands of people overnight. Renters are half of Portland, landlords aren't the other half. Shouldn't stable housing half of Portland be worth that divisiveness? Commissioners, you need to take this issue seriously and you need to listen to the experts and the people who have lived with the consequences of your actions and inaction. The only place that the city should be warehousing homeless people is in permanent affordable housing. That is actually affordable. We are in this housing and homeless crisisness, but not fixing the problem. You are failing to turn off the faucet before pulling out the mop. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Keelan, does that complete communications for today?
It does.
Great. Why don't we go to our first time certain? Colleagues, let's please read item 397. Or 937.
Appoint Eli Spivak to the Development Review Advisory Committee for term to expire November 8th, 2025.
I believe this item comes to us from Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Ryan. Commissioner Ryan, I'll turn the floor over to you.
Thank you, Council President Mapps. I'm delighted to introduce a new member to DRAC today. Just so you know, the Development Review Advisory Committee, DRAC, is the city's primary advisory body regarding development review. DRAC seeks to foster a timely, predictable, and accountable development review process and advocates for the consistent and fair application of regulations. DRAC's 17 members represent groups with interest in development and development review process. DRAC members are appointed by the City Council to 1 3-year term with the possibility of serving a second 3-year term. I'm pleased to present Eli Spivak. Did I pronounce your last name?
Oh, it's Spivak. That's Spivak. Fine.
Okay. Well, I actually want to get it right, so thanks for telling me that. For the appointment to a 3-year term as a DRAC member representing the Planning and Sustainability Commission. I will now turn it over to DRAC liaison, Mark Fetters. Mark, it's good to see you.
Thank you. You too, Commissioner Ryan. My name is Mark Fetters. I'm with the Bureau of Development Services, and I am the staff liaison to the DRAC. Very excited to present Eli this morning for appointment as a DRAC member. As Commissioner Ryan mentioned, Eli is being appointed to a position that is designated for one of the Planning and Sustainability Commission members. So we didn't go through our normal recruitment process where we would widely advertise the position. We worked with the PSC and through their process and their vote, Eli was nominated. And we'll give Eli some time to address you as well. Just to summarize, Eli has over 20 years experience developing affordable housing communities in Oregon. He founded Orange Splot LLC in 2006 for that purpose. And he has been a past chair of the PSC and is currently serving as a commissioner on the PSC as well. We're very happy to bring him forward this morning. And Eli, I'll give the mic to you.
Well, thank you, Mark and Commissioner Ryan. Boy, Lesha and I
reminds me, I appreciate all of you guys who put yourself out there in public. I'm more of a behind the scenes guy. So I'm honored to have been recommended by the Planning Sustainability Commission to follow Jeff Bacharach as his newest representative on DRAC. And over the years, I've interacted with BDS and partner development bureaus in lots of ways. Extremely hands-on. It's a very small company. So I'm usually the actual person writing applications, filling out required forms, uploading or redlining check sheets, meeting with staff virtually or in person. Specifically, I regularly research site development options and constraints online through over-the-counter meetings and more recently with the 15-minute consults, which I love. I'm a whiz at Portland Maps. I've applied for all manners of permits. I've personally done land use adjustments, building code appeals, public works alternative reviews, and a competent zone map amendment process. I've called hundreds of inspections. I've walked job sites with inspectors and I passed and sometimes failed them. And sometimes I get pretty creative with the zoning code and the building codes in my projects to try and create affordable community-oriented housing. Over the years, I've had both positive and negative experiences with these processes, and I've made plenty of mistakes along the way. But in all those years, I've never had an inside view into how the Bureau ticks. So serving on DRAC will help me understand that better and probably increase my appreciation for what goes on behind the scenes, largely invisible to the eyes of applicants. During 7 years on the PSC, we've recommended significant changes to Portland zoning code. You guys all know that because you've seen them too. Although I think we've made some good headway in tilting regulations towards more equitable and environmentally friendly development, more often than not, that's made the rules more complex. And I'm sure we've made some mistakes along the way. So I'm hopeful that with a new round of recap coming up, a less packed schedule, and renewed focus on land use, the Planning Commission will have a chance to clean up and simplify the code going forward. By serving on DRAC, I hope to be part of that feedback loop. Lastly, I'll share that I also serve on Oregon's Rebuilding Task Force, which is established to help Oregon meet its greenhouse gas reduction goals in the built environment following the governor's CPP executive order. This will likely result in recommendations for new state-level rules applicable to new and maybe existing buildings, which may impact BDS's work, and I'm happy to informally liaison with that process if helpful. The PSC regularly receives invaluable input from BDS and other implementing bureaus on zoning code for projects we review, and there's no substitute for having one of us represented on DRAC, so I'm glad that tradition continues. Learning directly from implementing staff about the practical impacts and unintended consequences of zoning code changes we recommend. So I'm always looking for a steep learning curve, and I'm sure I'll find one through this appointment. Thank you.
Thank you, colleague. Oh, is that the end of testimony?
I'm sorry.
Any further comments?
No, nothing further. Just one point that
sure.
With Eli's appointment, we will have the DRAC membership will be completely filled out for the first time in a few years. So we're very excited about that.
I'm delighted to hear that. Great job to everyone who helped with recruitment. Colleagues, do you have any questions at this point?
Yeah, I just want to make a couple of comments too. Mark, first of all, it's not only filled up, but it also has the most diverse representation ever for DRAC. And I want to thank you for partnering with our office on that. Eli, I think it's so important that we have somebody that has hands-on experience. As you know, the development, the DRAC is the oversight for BDS, and BDS is the mothership, if you will, of permitting. And our permitting process has needed to improve for decades. And we're really digging into that. And this time we have all eight bureaus that are involved, are included in that change management. But having the perspective from BPS is really a big deal. And too often that hasn't been at the table. And it's been wonderful to work with my colleague, Commissioner Rubio, as we see that handoff being the most important thing. So you've really said it in your testimony, theory to practice. It really does matter when you go from vision to implementation. But the fact that you said that you're hands-on and you're not from a big company, but you actually do all the forms, because we're hearing a lot from customers. We just did our second customer survey. Commissioner Mapps and I are leading the effort to improve the permitting process. So knowing that you're at the DRAC table is really important, since that's one of the biggest goals of BDS at this time. So thanks. Well, I have one question. Thanks for saying yes. Well, where do you find the time, and what motivated you to decide to serve on this?
Well, I'm in for permits right now, so I'll have hands-on experience on the project. I'm not building something currently, and the state task force sunsets in the fall, so I have a chance to do something. And although I'll continue on the Planning Commission, I'm at least proposing that, I'm leaving the design of the Sustainability Commission the city needs, to a whole new group of people. So for a while, as I chaired the Planning and Sustainability Commission, we were trying to do a big job description. It is shrinking now to be more manageable.
You know, sometimes we pass a lot of new codes, and then sometimes we don't really clean up what maybe isn't necessary anymore. So I just want to encourage you to bring that lens into this.
We've been waiting for a recap for years to come back. So we're thrilled to have the chance, because we know from customers, there's always feedback about how the code could be easier to interpret, simplified, and we finally have staff time and bandwidth to do it. So that's an exciting time.
Yeah, I'm really pleased that Commissioner Rubio saw to it that we would hire those positions. Yeah, we have code clutter. Anyway, I see that my colleague has her hands up.
Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you. I just want to chime in too and say that I'm just really thrilled to see this appointment of Eli to the Design Review Commission. I just can't say enough about his leadership. I've had the pleasure of getting to know Eli over the course of the last couple of years in our work with PSC together. And he's committed, you're very thoughtful, and you're an innovative leader. But also what I love about Eli is that he brings a multidimensional lens to all of this intersectional work that we do at the city, particularly when it comes to climate and planning and now design. So I'm really eager to see where his information and his really valuable experience and insight can lend to this work and to the commission, and just really, really appreciative of your time in this work, Eli.
Thanks.
Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this appointment?
No one signed up.
Colleagues, are there any, if there are no more questions or comments at this point, why don't we call the roll? And seeing no questions, Keelan, please call the roll.
President Mapps, do you want to have someone make a motion?
Of course, sorry.
So moved.
I get a second. Okay,
great. Rubio.
Oh, am I starting?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, very happy to go.
Ryan.
Great to see you, and I really enjoyed our conversation a few weeks ago. Maybe it was a month ago, but anyway, I really am glad you're here. Thanks so much. I vote aye.
Maps.
I want to thank Eli for agreeing to serve on this important committee. I vote aye, and the appointment is approved. Colleagues, I want to wait on our, why don't we go to the consent agenda now. Keelan, has anything been pulled off the consent agenda?
We've had one item pulled, but we won't be able to vote until we have four.
Okay. So colleagues, we're going to have to pick through the agenda and work on the things that we can work on. Commissioner Rubio, are you ready to move forward with 939, the South Portland Historic District Guidelines? You're on mute. Second reading? Yeah. Oh, that's a 10-15 time certain. Okay, I apologize. So we can't do consent. Why don't we move forward with 944. Do we have relevant BES staff in the room, or BES / OMF staff available for this one? Yes, we're getting the signal that we do. Keelan, can you please read 944?
944, accept bid of Interlochen Inc. for the citywide sump replacement project for $1,619,001.
Okay, this comes to us from OMF. I'm going to turn it directly over to staff. Okay, welcome staff. Hey, Jess, are you there? 944? They're muted. Do we need to have a staff presentation on this, or can we just move forward? Oh, there we go. We got Michael here.
MF, I'm going to turn it directly over to staff.
Sorry, I was getting feedback.
Welcome, staff. Hey, Jess, are you there? 944?
Yes, I am. Sorry, Commissioner. We were just getting out of a meeting here.
Great. Well, your item is up for 944. Do you have a presentation for us today?
Very brief one.
Do we need to have a staff presentation on this, or can we just move forward? Oh, there we go. We got Michael here. OMF, I'm going to turn it off.
Well, let me pause here. We seem to have a delayed loop, and the loop is delayed by maybe a minute or something.
Are you there? 944?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. Commissioner, we were just getting out of a meeting here.
Great. Well, your item is up for 944. Do you have a presentation for us today?
Very brief one.
Do we need to have a staff presentation on this, or can we just move forward? Oh, there we go. We got Michael here. OMF, I'm going to turn it off. Well, let me pause here. We seem to have a delayed loop, and the loop is delayed by maybe a minute or something.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. Commissioner, we were just getting out of a meeting here.
Great. Well, your item is up for 944. Do you have a presentation for us today?
Very brief one.
Do we need to have a staff presentation on this, or can we just move forward? Oh, there we go. We got Michael here. OMF, I'm going to turn it off. Well, let me pause here. We seem to have a delayed loop, and the loop is delayed by maybe a minute or something.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry.
Great. Well, your item is up for 944. Do you have a presentation for us today?
Should I just talk over it? Okay, folks, we're having some technical difficulties right now. Council is going to take a 10-minute recess while we work out some of the kinks in the system. We will be back at 10:10.
Hey, Jess, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, so, hang on a second, sorry. Okay, now can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So it looks like there may be some kind of weird feedback loop coming from your mic.
I think we fixed it. I was looking around. We were in this room in here, and I think it was picking up an audio from the monitor I was on.
Okay. All right, so I think that's good. We'll probably just finish this recess. I'll let council know that we're ready to go.
Okay.
Thanks, Jess.
No problem. Was not expecting to present this early.
Yeah, I know. We've had to rearrange the agenda a little bit this morning. Thanks.
Okay, colleagues, we're back in session. Let's resume the staff presentation on BES 944.
All right. Good morning, Commissioner Mapps, members of City Council. My name is Jess Klein. I am the Procurement Manager for Goods and Services, and I'm here to present the CPO report to Council. The City Council approved Ordinance 190647 on December 15th, 2021. The engineer's estimate for this project was $1,458,600, and the confidence level was high. Procurement Services issued the invitation to bid on September 13th with a due date of October 4th, 2022, and five bids were received. Interlaken Incorporated was the apparent low bidder and is the recommended awardee. Their bid came in at $1,619,001, which is approximately 11% above the engineer's estimate. BES has recently seen an increase in bid prices for the following reasons. Cost of oil has gone up, leading to an increased cost in paving. On this project, it was an increased cost of almost $100,000 over the engineer's estimate. Cost of PVC products has gone up recently due to short supply. On this project, it was an increase of almost $50,000 over the engineer's estimate. The increase of those bid items has increased the bid prices to the 11% over engineer's estimate. The city's standard 20% aspirational goal applies to this solicitation, and the following is the breakdown of the utilization of Interlaken Incorporated. 73.85% will be self-performed by Interlaken Incorporated, a COBID certified WBE firm. 25.06% certified COBID subcontractors, and 1.09 non-certified subcontractors. For costing, that comes up to $405,715 going to COBID certified firms. Funds are available in the Sewer System Operating Fund. And if you have any questions about the procurement process, I'm happy to answer them. And if you have any questions about the project, BES project manager Michael Johnson is in attendance as well.
Colleagues, are there any questions about the report so far? Seeing none, Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this report?
No one signed up.
This is a report. Do I have a motion to accept the report?
Yes. Second.
Okay. Thank you. Keelan, can we call the roll on this report?
Rubio.
Thank you to the mayor and to Commissioner Mapps for bringing this forward. I'm happy to see this project move forward. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Mapps.
Aye. The report is accepted. Next, colleagues, we will move on to 945. Keelan, please call or please read this item title.
Adopt City of Portland Investment Policy.
Great. And I this comes to us from the office of OMF, and I will just turn it directly over to staff. It looks like we have Bridget here. Welcome, Bridget.
Great, thank you very much. Good morning, commissioners. My name for the record is Bridget O'Callaghan, and I'm the city's treasurer. Today, I'm joining you to present the city's investment policy for your consideration. Oregon law pertaining to the investment of public funds requires the city to adopt the investment policy annually. The purpose of this resolution before you is to seek council's approval to renew our existing investment policy. We are not proposing any changes to the policy this year. The city's investment policy describes a framework and criteria for investing the city's cash assets. The investment policy serves as a guide to offer an objective course of action to be followed. This is especially important during periods of market disruption when emotional or instinctive responses might otherwise motivate less prudent actions, which really our guiding force in terms of how we invest the city's cash. The investment earnings on the city's portfolio make a significant contribution to the city's budget and to the programs and services that bureaus provide. The investment earnings net of an admin fee to cover Treasury's operating costs are distributed directly back to city funds. In fiscal year 21-22, Treasury earned $18 million on the portfolio, and fiscal year to date through September 30th, 2022, Treasury has earned $7.6 million. Again, those funds will go directly back to the bureaus and are incorporated into their budgets.
I need to interrupt right here. I'm receiving a message from the clerk.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Please continue, Bridget. Sorry.
Oh. I apologize. I misread the room, as always. Please continue.
No worries. I just had a couple of more comments to make for you. The performance on the portfolio is monitored against appropriate benchmarks for similar portfolios, and that information can be found on the city's website. The City of Portland's investment policy is actually a little more restrictive than state law requires. We have limited our investment parameters to be very safe, including investment in interest-bearing deposits, United States Treasury and agency securities, and select corporate securities. We believe that the city's investment policy is a responsible approach to investing the city's cash assets, and we are seeking council's adoption of the investment policy as presented. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Colleagues, any questions about this item?
Hello, City Treasurer Bridget O'Callaghan, good to see you. I was struck by the fact that we've earned this fiscal year $7.6 million, and then I was struck, of course, by you explaining that we have a very safe portfolio. I think if you could just elaborate a little bit more on that, I think most of us know when we're opening our quarterly statements, or some of us don't even want to look at them right now. And so tell me a little bit more about how safe they are, as many of our investments are going down in 401(3) and 401(b) programs.
Great question, Commissioner. Thank you for asking it. It's because of this policy. Many of you, as you mentioned, may have pension portfolios that have seen, you know, a 25-35% hit. And that is because you are typically invested in more risky instruments. What we do for the City of Portland, these are cash assets that are passing their way through, right? We collect them in revenue and then they're going directly into various programs and services. So while we have them, we try and gain a little extra return on them for the city. And we do that through very safe investments, very high quality investments, very limited parameter for what we can do with the funds. And the reason for that is that it preserves that principle. That is very important in terms of the mission, if you will, of the investment portfolio is first to preserve the principal, second to ensure liquidity, that the money's there when the bureaus need to spend it, and then third to earn a market return on it. And it's in that order that we really focus on it, first of all, by preserving the principal.
Thank you so much. You answered my question more.
Colleagues, any other questions or comments on this item? Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this?
No one signed up.
So this is a resolution. I don't think I need a motion to accept this, right? Colleagues, if we don't have any more questions or comments, I will ask Keelan to please call the roll.
Rubio.
I want to thank Bridget for her work and presentation today. I also just want to say we've all been incredibly busy in these recent months and time ran out for our office, but I want to signal to my colleagues that for next year, I will be looking at ways to clarify the city's commitment to not invest in fossil fuels or nuclear weapons and weapons of war. There are lists that we could reference like the Fossil Free Index, Carbon Underground, or the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute top 100 arms industry database that would make our commitments even more clear. So again, I just want to note my interest and intent and look forward to the discussion next year. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Thank you, Bridget, for this presentation. And I really appreciate the comments from my colleague, Commissioner Rubio. And I look forward to being a part of some edits to our portfolio. I know that you will keep your eye on what you said earlier. That's the principal in the earned market return. And so I appreciate that you're a good stewards with the city's and the taxpayers' money. I vote aye.
Maps.
Aye. The resolution is accepted. And colleagues, I believe now we need to go back and clean up a mistake I made in 944. I'll turn it over to the clerk to explain how we got here.
Thank you, President Mapps. I think I missed who moved and seconded the report for 944. So I would just like to clarify, I heard Commissioner Ryan say that he moved, but I didn't hear who seconded. Commissioner Rubio seconded. Okay. All right. Perfect. Commissioner Rubio, is that correct? Yep. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Great. I appreciate my colleagues and staff working with me to clarify the record. Okay, so we've passed 945. Why don't we move on to 939, which is a second reading. Keelan, can you please call the roll on that? Or not call the roll. Read the title.
Thank you, President. Adopt South Portland Historic District Design Guidelines as District-Specific Historic Resource Review Approval Criteria and repeal the Lair Hill Historic Conservation District Design Guidelines.
Colleagues, any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio.
First, I want to thank the Community Advisory Group for their thoughtful approach to this important historic area. I also want to commend Patricia Diefendurfer and Brandon Spencer Hartle and staff for all their excellent work and for supporting such a diverse and creative group of Portlanders in arriving at a new design guideline, set of guidelines. I've enjoyed learning about the cultural history of the area and hope the design guidelines can allow for new development throughout the district while also ensuring the protection of historic buildings. It's important that our historic areas allow for change over time. And in the case of South Portland, I'm really hopeful that the new guidelines can help bring back the affordable multifamily housing and active commercial uses while acknowledging the heritage that were once common in this part of town. So I vote aye.
Ryan.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio, and thank you, the team at Planning Sustainability. I liked everything that Commissioner Rubio just said. I found that your presentation was so thoughtful about the heritage, the cultural heritage of the area, and I know a little bit about it, and yet it was great that you took that time as you developed this plan. And I also noticed your thoughtfulness on how we can do affordable housing in the area. So I think we have the right vision. Now we have to move it into action. I vote aye.
Mapps.
Aye. So Commissioner Mapps votes aye. And the item passes. Next. Why don't we go to item 946? 946, Keelan, please call the roll. Or please read the item.
Authorized letter of agreement between the city and the Portland Police Association to ensure police officers receive a higher rate of pay upon promotion to sergeant, detective, or criminalist, and to amend the hiring process for public safety specialists.
Great. I believe we have staff to present on this item.
Yep. Good morning, Council. I'll be providing some information to you on behalf of Jarrell, who's out today from Labor Relations. And I'm joined today by Deputy Chief Fromm for questions from PPB. So just briefly, this ordinance is to support a letter of agreement that we've signed with the Portland Police Association. It accomplishes two items. The first, making it easier to hire PS3s or public safety specialists. Currently, when the police bureau hires a PS3, psychologists use the same disqualifying events for a psychological evaluation for police officers as they use for the PS3s. So this would be a great way to allow the city to hire more people as unarmed public safety response. The second component in this ordinance is related to the promotion of officers. When an officer promotes, this agreement would allow the Bureau to place people on a pay scale that moves them from the next pay step and then ensures at least a 1.75% greater than that step For people who are already being paid at the top step, they would receive at least a 1.75% increase upon promotion. And the salary schedule for officers and sergeants, criminalists, detectives overlap. So someone could get promoted. And for those officers, for example, who only have 5 years as a police officer and were close to their anniversary date, they could be in a position to make less after they are promoted than people who had remained an officer with the same years of service. So this letter of agreement serves to incentivize good officers to promote so they don't have to worry about a loss of pay. That is a quick summary of this ordinance, and we're here if you have any specific questions. Thank you.
Colleagues, are there any questions on this item? Commissioner Ryan, it seems like you might have a question.
Well, I'm actually just taking it all in at the moment. I see that Chief Fromm is on the line, and I'd like to hear some of your thoughts on this as well.
Yeah, sure thing. I'll address the pay issue first. This is kind of it's a technical fix for a very small number of people that find themselves not maxed out at the officer pay rate. They're still probably about like the 5 year mark, 6 year mark, and they wish to get promoted. The way that the pay scales to the next step, sergeant, criminalist, or detective work, they will probably, those particular people will get a very small pay increase instead of like a larger one that they would be entitled to if they just remained in rank. And so this is just a quick fix for us. The money's already budgeted. It's not something that is going to be breaking our bank. So to us, it's a goodwill gesture that we want to encourage people to take promotions. And I feel it's personally very appropriate. And then for the second one, way back when we started the PS3 program, the Public Safety Support Specialists, language was put into the PPA contract that said that the Public Safety Support Specialists had to be hired using the same standards as police officers. And what we're starting to understand now is that in my opinion, I don't know if that's exactly appropriate. Public safety support specialists are not police officers. They're not expected to do the same things. We probably do not expect the same type of emotional responses or resilience as we do with police officers. So by allowing for a different standard to be used for a public safety support specialist, it should increase the number of people that will be eligible for the job. And I find that exciting. And then there's language in there that says that after 6 months in their role as a public safety support specialist, they're able to retake an exam. This is for those that actually really want to be police officers and maybe have not passed the test the first time. But it just puts in writing, you're not a PS3 forever. If you really want to be a police officer, you're going to be allowed to come back and test again. And many people do test again later and pass because some of the components of the psychological exam involve maturity and your ability to describe how you relate well in society. So as people age and get more work experience, they tend to do better.
Thank you so much.
Keelan, is there any public testimony on this?
We have one person.
Okay. Welcome.
Michelle Stevenson.
Hello, my name is Michelle Stevenson. I'm a community member, and today I speak for the group Portland Cop Watch. Members of City Council, it is of great concern that amendments are being made to the Portland Police Association contract without any of the same transparency that was offered in the first part of the negotiations that concluded in February. Portland Cop Watch has no objection to the item that will make it so that sergeants do not make less than their subordinates. However, it's worth pointing out once again that the PPA is an unusual rank and file bargaining unit because it includes both line officers and their supervisors. Cop Watch has also long expressed concern that the public safety support specialists, the unarmed officers that the community desperately wanted to supplement armed cops, are also in the PPA. It appears the new amendments will allow PSS specialists to A, fail the psych exam for officers and still be able to conduct police business with the community, and B, if a PSS specialist applies to be a full-fledged officer, it will allow them to fail the psychological exam and then reapply 6 months later. This is very troubling when compared to the mental health experts who are connected to the Portland Street Response Program, another alternative to armed officers. Portland Cop Watch urges council to reconsider this amendment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we have heard a staff presentation and we've heard
public testimony. This is a non-emergency item, so it carries over for a second reading. Is that correct, Keelan? Great. Next up, why don't we go to, why don't we go to 947? So colleagues, on this item, we can hear testimony, but until we have a fuller house, we're not gonna be able to vote. So why don't we read the item, hear testimony, and then we can vote at some later date. Keelan, can you please read 947?
Authorized competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest responsible bidder for construction of the Farragut Park Improvements Project for an estimated cost of $2,200,000.
Great, thank you. And do we have a staff presentation on this?
Yeah, Council President, I just have some opening remarks and then I will turn it over to staff.
Great, Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you. Farragut Park is a beloved local park with a variety of recreation opportunities, and the Farragut Park Improvement Project expands on these recreation opportunities by providing new, modern play features for our youngest park users. The project also embodies Portland Parks and Recreation's goal of equitable access by reconstructing multiple park entrances and play features so they are accessible for people living with disabilities. The project projects the existing experience of park users by providing long-term restroom facilities and rebuilding the basketball court, which has been a community focus for several years. So I will now like to introduce Portland Parks and Recreation Capital Projects Manager Jill Hutchins to share a presentation.
Good morning, members of council. I believe somebody is going to share the presentation for me. Is that correct? There it is. Thank you. My name is Jill Hutchinson. I'm a capital project manager with Portland Parks and Recreation, and I'm here today to request council authorization for competitive bid solicitation and contracting with the lowest responsible bidder for construction of the Farragut Park Improvements Project. Next slide, please. Farragut Park is a 14-acre park located in the Piedmont neighborhood of North Portland. It is predominantly a neighborhood park and also draws users from outside the neighborhood during softball and youth baseball seasons. Applegate Head Start shares a southern border with the park, and their students utilize a paved multi-use area within the park. In 2020, Parks identified several deficiencies and an opportunity for growth at Farragut Park. Parks leadership allocated system development charge funds, major maintenance funds, and Lou royalty funds to create a project that would provide enhanced play opportunities, as well as address two major outstanding maintenance issues and remediate several accessibility barriers at the park. Next slide, please. Existing amenities at Farragut Park include a play area, a restroom building with two restrooms, picnic tables, benches, paved pathways, a splash pad, a basketball court, a paved multi-use area, and a softball field with lighting and perimeter fencing. The basketball court, as shown in the leftmost photo, has been fenced off and unusable for approximately 3 years due to tripping hazards caused by heaving pavement. The existing play area, shown in the middle photo, is more than 20 years old and is for use by 5 to 12-year-olds and does not contain any play equipment for children under the age of 5. The play area fall surfacing is engineered wood fiber, otherwise known as wood chips, which are not operationally accessible for people in mobility devices. The existing restroom building, shown in the top right photo, was constructed in 1971. And during the pre-design phase, the building was determined to be structurally deficient and unable to support a new sustainably operable roof without significant structural upgrades. Parks performed a cost-benefit analysis and decided the most cost-effective and long-term solution is to remove the restroom building and replace it with two freestanding Portland Loo restrooms. Next slide, please. The Farragut Park Improvements Project includes the following major project elements: the addition of a new toddler play area, including a picnic table, benches, and trash cans, indicated by the number one, as shown on the screen. It also includes the demolition and replacement of the basketball court, as shown by number two, the demolition of the restroom building and installation of two Portland Loos, indicated by number three, and the remediation of several ADA barriers, including replacing the wood chips of the existing play area with rubber tile surfacing, replacing several play components of the existing play structure to ensure it is ADA compliant, constructing ADA curb ramps within the right-of-way, and the repair of several hundred feet of park pathways to meet ADA compliance, including the reconstruction of the eastmost park entrance to make it fully accessible. And all of these improvements are indicated by the number four on the screen. Next slide, please. The construction cost estimate is $2.2 million, paid for with SDC funding, major maintenance funding, and Loo royalty revenues. Next slide, please. So we are here to request that Council authorize competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest responsible bidder for construction of the Farragut Park Improvements Project. This project is being submitted as an emergency ordinance due to concerns about the volatility and competitive nature of the bidding climate for a project of this size and the need to perform construction activities during the summer months due to quantity of weather-dependent materials such as asphalt, concrete, and surface paint that are involved in the project scope of work. The emergency ordinance allows construction bidding to occur prior to the 2022 holiday season, which is late November through December, and which enables contractors to properly plan and balance their spring and summer 2023 workloads and reserve paving subcontractors with enough advance notice for the project activities. With the acceptance of this authority to bid by Council, we will proceed with bid advertisement as soon as possible. The Parks team, in partnership with Procurement Services, will utilize the standard subcontractor equity program specification, which requires 20% of the hard construction costs be subcontracted to certified firms. Of that 20%, there is a 14% goal for disadvantaged minority and women utilization. Procurement's inclusive contracting manager will assist in outreach specifically to minority contractors. We anticipate construction to start in April 2023 with a completion date by December 2023. And I am happy to answer any questions you might have at this time.
Colleagues, are there any questions? Seeing none, Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this?
No one signed up.
Okay. We're going to do something that we don't do very often right here. We're not prepared to vote on this today for technical reasons, so we will carry over. We'll hold this open, and what's the right language to use here?
So the question, I suppose, is whether you want to carry this over to the afternoon agenda, or because I believe you will have for the afternoon agenda, so you could carry over any emergency items and any four-fifths items and the consent over to the afternoon.
Okay, well, I'd like to do that right now. We'll carry this item over into the afternoon for staff sitting in the room. I'm looking at Mike Myers over here. Might be here for the four-fifths. We're not going to get to that until the afternoon. We apologize for the delay. And for technical reasons, we'll also deal with the consent agenda at the 2 o'clock session also.
Commissioner Mapps, there was one other item. There's a time certain proclamation.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I don't know if the desire is to do that now.
We're doing that now.
Okay.
Colleagues, we're going to take care of the last item for this morning. This is the Veterans Day proclamation. And just so my colleagues can track what we're doing, again, this is going to be a little bit different than normal. Commissioner Hardesty cannot be here this morning, but she has a Veterans Day statement which she'd like to share, and I've asked Commissioner Ryan to read that statement. And then should any of my other colleagues have comments they want to make, you can make them. I'll offer some comments and then read the proclamation. And I see the clerk is giving me a look.
May I just read the title?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that was just a preamble, so people know which way this is going to go. Keelan, can you please read the proclamation for today, which is 938?
Thank you. Proclaim November 11th, 2022 to be Veterans Day.
Thank you, colleagues. I think I'd like to begin today by asking Commissioner Ryan to read a statement from Commissioner Hardesty.
Council President Mapps, I actually think we could read hers at the end.
Okay.
And then the rest of us, because I'd like to honor her in that way.
Okay. Excellent. I don't believe, do we have any invited testimony on this one? No. Commissioner Rubio, I have a couple. Well, here, why don't we do it the way we normally do it? I have some thoughts on this I'd like to share. Colleagues, I'm honored to join you in declaring November 11th, 2022 to be Veterans Day here in Portland, Oregon. On Veterans Day, we honor the brave women and men who have served in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, or Coast Guard. The first Veterans Day proclamation was signed on November 11th, 1954 by Dwight D. Eisenhower. A lot has changed since 1954. For example, since 1954, American soldiers have fought in Vietnam, Grenada, Panama, Iraq, Afghanistan, and many other places. And here's another thing that's changed. Since 1954, the burden of military service has fallen on fewer and fewer shoulders. For example, in 1960, 45% of men in the United States were veterans. Today, fewer than 10% of adults in the United States are vets. That trend means that fewer and fewer Portlanders have a direct personal connection to a soldier, veteran, or Veterans Day. Because so few of us have direct connections to the military, it's more important than ever that each and every one of us take a moment to ponder the meaning of Veterans Day. So here are some of the things I'll be thinking about this Veterans Day. This Veterans Day, I want to thank our veterans for their contributions to our country and our city, which is why I want to take this moment to thank Bob Causey, Director of Portland's Bureau of Emergency Communications, for his service in the Air Force and for his service to our city. I also want to recognize and thank Portland Police Chief Chuck Lavelle for his service in the Air Force and his service to our city. And I will take this moment to recognize and honor Portland City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty for her service in the Navy and her service to our city. Now, on Veterans Day, we not only honor the veterans who walk among us, we also remember those who sacrificed their lives in the service of our nation. And on Veterans Day, we also support the families who support our soldiers. And on Veterans Day, we recommit ourselves to the principle which comes from the military, but is also a North Star for those of us in public service. And that principle is this: leave no one behind. That's why on this Veterans Day, I want to thank the heroes who devote their time to giving Portland veterans a hands up. So thank you to the Veterans Administration, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Paralyzed Veterans of America, the National Association for Black Veterans, and do good Multnomah. I want those groups to know that this council sees you and we appreciate your service to our veterans and our community. Colleagues, for these reasons and more, I am honored to join you in declaring November 11th, 2022 to be Veterans Day in Portland, Oregon. Thank you. I'll keep the gavel.
Can we pause for a moment? I would like to interrupt to note that with the return of the mayor, we are going to hear the items that we were going to continue into the afternoon and the morning. I'm just worried we're going to lose some of the people who'd signed up to testify for the 4/5 item. So I'm just announcing that. So if you are on here for the 4/5 item, we are going to be taking the testimony this morning. Thank you.
Thanks.
And Mr. Mayor, why don't I just finish out the proclamation, or would you like me to just finish out the proclamation and then the gavel?
Go ahead and keep the gavel through this item.
Okay.
I do have a statement I'd like to read on behalf of Commissioner Hardesty.
Okay, that sounds great.
I handed it, but I have my hand up then.
Okay, Commissioner Ryan, please proceed.
Thank you, Council President Mapps, and also thank you to Navy veteran Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. I think it's really important that we take a pause to celebrate Veterans Day. And for me, I come from a military family. My dad was in the Air Force. My oldest brother in the Navy, Mike. Pat was in the Air Force and Coast Guard. Tim was in the Navy. Kevin was in the Navy for over 20 years. Sean was in the Navy. And my sister's husbands were in the Navy. My sister Bridget, husbands, plural. Coming from a military family, you learn a lot about sacrifice. You learn a lot about the sacrifice of the spouses and of the children. I always remember when my brothers were deployed, they'd be gone for months, and it allowed me as an uncle to be more active in their lives because, you know, they missed their dad. So I think on this Veterans Day, my message is that I think too often we overlook the spouses and the families that make a sacrifice for our country as well. So I wanted to lift that. And I also want to, I'm looking at my notes here. I just want to say that I think it's important in the future that we also seek some of our employees who are veterans. I know there's a lot of our employees who are veterans, and it'll be great to have them participate in this annual proclamation. As the person who is the dotted line to the counties, homeless services or services, I think it's very important to always put our veterans first. They've sacrificed for our country, and they really deserve to have housing and to be taken care of as they return home. So thank you for having this proclamation, Commissioner Hardesty and Mayor, on the dais today. Thanks.
Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you. First, I want to thank the Veterans Empowerment Team for bringing this proclamation forward. I want to recognize all the veterans that have bravely served our country abroad and at home, and especially to our city employees that are veterans themselves and continue to serve the public. I also want to appreciate and thank our own esteemed Navy veteran and colleague, Commissioner Hardesty. To Commissioner Hardesty, I want to thank you for your service and your leadership. You've broken through so many barriers for all of us, and we're so grateful. And I'm so grateful for your leadership and friendship. The type of dedication in service to our country and to all of our communities is a significant and honorable action and a sacrifice, and one that sometimes results in the sacrifice of life in this service. And for that, we owe them and all veterans and their families and loved ones an endless debt of gratitude. We've all heard stories about how veterans, when coming back, many veterans, when coming back home from abroad, struggle with the effects of trauma experienced during their service or struggle to get the supports they need to start their next chapter. And we know we have too many veterans living on the street. And as Commissioner Hardesty has said in the past, we historically have failed as a country by failing to appreciate and support them equitably and commensurately with the physical and emotional sacrifices that they've made. So we're obligated to do more. And they have a right to housing, support services, economic opportunities, acceptance, respect, and dignity. So today we say thank you to these individuals, and we honor them, and we will learn from our past to do better in the future.
Great. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Council President Mapps. I'm just going to lower my hands before I forget to do that. First of all, I just want to say how much I appreciate this proclamation. And I appreciate the fact that we take this time every year to remember our veterans. I appreciate my colleagues sharing their personal stories. I also grew up in a household where my father had served in the Korean conflict. And he was, for a part of that time, an instructor, a firearms instructor. And I remember growing up in a household with military rifles in the closet and not really fully understanding what they were or what they meant to my father. He rarely talked, in fact, he never talked about his experience with that conflict, but I know it impacted him deeply. I know it because he went back to his unit's annual event pretty much every year during the last years of his life. And I remember that was important time for him, and it meant a lot to him to be able to get together with those individuals. And I don't think it was just the friendships that they developed, although I believe they were genuine. I believe they also needed each other to be able to reflect on the experience they had shared and how it might have impacted them in their lives all the way to the present time. And I'm always just mindful of that when I meet veterans that I know they've experienced something that's very hard for them to explain, to convey to those of us who have not served. So I just want to express my gratitude to those individuals. We should do it every day, not just this day, but I'm also glad that we have this formal opportunity once a year to do it. Commissioner Hardesty could not be here today, but I really want to thank her and appreciate her not only for ensuring that we bring this proclamation forward, but also for her service to this nation as a sailor and a member of our distinguished United States Navy. And she asked if I would please read a statement on her behalf today, so I will do that. She starts off by saying, I'd like to start by thanking Mayor Wheeler for offering to read this statement while I'm attending the DOJ settlement hearing. My time in the Navy as one of the first women to ever board ship was a transformative part of my life for me that confirmed who I thought I was. Someone who would stand up for the little guy and someone who would be bold in my language and perspective. I'm honored to have served my country. I encourage everyone to thank the veterans in their life today. But I also ask everyone to realize how many of our country's veterans are suffering and do not have the housing or health care they need and deserve. I urge everyone to not only support our veterans today, but every day by advocating for more veteran services and care at the local, state, and federal level.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And now I will read the proclamation. Whereas the first Veterans Day proclamation was signed on November 11th, 1954, by President Dwight D. Eisenhower to pay homage to all of our veterans who have contributed to the preservation of this great nation. And whereas the brave men and women of our Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard exemplify selfless and steadfast commitment while risking their lives to ensure our freedom. And whereas wounded and suffering military members and veterans who return home honor us with their dignity, courage, and valor. And whereas veterans deserve the utmost respect and support, which they have earned while defending our homeland. And whereas we admire and stand beside the families and loved ones of those who have served and currently serve and the immense burdens they bear. And whereas we are continually grateful for the freedoms we enjoy in Portland and across the United States, thanks to the service and sacrifices of the men and women in our military. Now, therefore, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim November 11th, 2022 to be Veterans Day in Portland, Oregon, and encourage all residents to honor those who have served and those who currently serve to preserve our values of justice, freedom, and democracy. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor and colleagues.
Council President and Mayor, I think we should just acknowledge there's a Veterans Day parade on Friday.
Oh, great.
And it's on MLK, and it's at, what time does it begin? 10 a.m.? Yeah, 10 a.m. So if you have the day off, I hope that you can show up. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan.
Mr. Mayor, a lot of things have happened today. Keelan, can you remind me just where we are? We're all on the same page.
Yeah, here's where I think we are. We're going to lose Director Myers soon, so we'll go to the 4/5 item next following that. We were not able to do the consent agenda because I was not here, so we'll do the consent agenda following that. After that, 9:47 is still open and needs a roll call. And then from there, we'll go back to the regular agenda. Correct? Does that sound right?
Thank you.
Perfect. Good.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
We got it. And Commissioner Mapps, thank you for filling in at the last moment as Council President. I appreciate it. I didn't give you much time to prep for it, but you did brilliantly, and I thank you. We'll move to the 4/5 agenda item 947-1. Keelan, please call that.
Authorized Director of the Community Safety Division to execute grant agreements for gun violence reduction programs.
This is an emergency ordinance. Colleagues, this item is on the 4/5 agenda today and seeks to expedite the process by which gun violence reduction grants are issued. Here to speak to us today about this ordinance is Lisa Freeman of the Community Safety Division. I don't see Lisa, but I do see Director Mike Myers. Welcome. Oh, she's on the Zoom.
Yep. She's joining us today.
Very good.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. For the record, my name is Mike Myers. I'm the Community Safety Transition Director for the City of Portland. I have with me today, as you noticed, Lisa Freeman, who is the Programs Manager for the Community Safety Division. Lisa is joining us virtually. Lisa, thank you for being here. I am here today in reference to item 947-1 to authorize the Director of the Community Safety Division to execute grant agreements for the gun violence reduction programs. Mayor and Council, as you are aware, on April 7th of 2021, you passed Ordinance 190355 that amended the FY 2020-2021 budget to allow for expenses in the Office of Management Finance, Office of Violence Prevention, and Portland Parks and Recreation to increase staffing, programming, and resources for community-based organizations to reduce the impact of gun violence in our community. This ordinance afforded the OVP Director in consultation with the Community Safety Director, the authorization to execute grant agreements with community-based organizations recommended for funding for amounts not to exceed 100% of the requested funding and a total not to exceed the amount of $500,000. This ordinance has expired. As we come upon the next opportunity for funding, we bring this new ordinance to you for consideration and vote. Currently, an ordinance is required to award grants to community-based organizations funded through the city's budget process. The ordinance process for outgoing grants requires significant time for the grant agreements to be fully executed. Due to the increase in gun violence, the City of Portland needs the ability to expedite agreements and amendments to expand resources to provide external support. Currently, the mayor must sign each grant agreement after the ordinance is passed by council. This new ordinance will afford the Community Safety Director the authorization to execute agreements and amendments related to the gun violence prevention grants, provided one, the city's financial obligations under the agreements, including amendments, do not exceed $500,000 per agreement, and two, council approves funding for the agreements in the city's budget. The requirements of city policy FIN-2.04 are waived as applied to grant agreements executed by the Community Safety Director in accordance with this ordinance. The authority granted to the Community Safety Director in Section A of this ordinance expires on June 30th, 2023. Thank you for hearing this item today. Mayor and Commissioner, one more note to add. I have heard that there is some concern that this ordinance somehow would allow the Community Safety Director to freely sign any kind of contract for ShotSpotter. That is not the case. This gives me no ability to sign any contract, and this has nothing to do with ShotSpotter technology. Just want to clarify in case you had individuals calling you about that issue. That's my testimony, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. And did Lisa, did you have anything to add?
No, nothing to add. Thank you.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions at this point? Do we have any public testimony on this item?
We do. We have six people who signed up.
Very good. 3 minutes each. Name for the record, please.
Okay. First up, we have Michelle Stevenson.
Hello, my name is Michelle Stevenson. I come today as for the group Cop Watch. And the Portland Cop Watch wants to raise the question of whether the item allowing the Community Safety Division to apply for grants without council approval will be used to bring the controversial ShotSpotter program to Portland. And I wanted to, so will they be able to apply for grants based on this? With the ShotSpotter.
Yes, so thank you for the question. I believe Director Myers addressed that, but Director Myers, could you state again clearly for the record for those who have concerns about ShotSpotter?
Yes, so two questions. Does it allow us to apply for grants? The direction in the prior ordinance in 2021 and this ordinance in 2022, we already have the grant agreements that we've had in the past that we will likely fund the same individuals. These are community-based organizations doing street-level outreach to reduce gun violence, wraparound services for gun violence reduction, also community and youth outreach prevention programs for gun violence reduction. Nothing to do with ShotSpotter. Second, ShotSpotter, my understanding, would most likely be some kind of a contract. This does not allow me to sign contracts on behalf of the city. The intent here is to sign similar grants that we signed in 2021 during the gun violence emergency to get funds out quickly to community-based organizations that are actively reducing gun violence in our communities. Has nothing to do whatsoever with ShotSpotter.
Thank you so much for your clarification. I have one final piece that I'm saying as a community member, not a part of Cop Watch, just me. I support more community programs based in Outer East Side. Hazelwood is the neighborhood most impacted by gun violence, followed closely by Chinatown and then my own neighborhood, Powellhurst, and other areas of Outer Northeast that I'm not as familiar with. The Outer East Side of the town has not received equal infrastructure and city commitment to our quality of life. If you look at where murders have occurred in the last decade, it's gradually become very disproportionately in the East Side. We need more resources to reach out to diverse demographics in the Outer East Side. We need more community groups and a concerted city effort in our area. It is really frustrating to listen to FITCOG meetings and hear PPB leaders of the gun violence reduction team that have to Google where Hazelwood is located. And when pressed say, that's really not the area I'm very familiar with. I'd have to contact East Precinct to see what they say. Then we had Mike Myers come into a FITCOG meeting and tout work with business owners in the entertainment district, but had nothing of a similar nature to say about Outer East Portland, where we've been hurt by gun violence very deeply. And thank you very much for your time. That's all.
Thank you. Appreciate your being here.
Next up, we have Lauren Armini.
Welcome, Lauren.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. You may recognize me from last week when I testified against the resolutions that would establish huge compulsory encampments for people living unhoused and criminalize them for noncompliance. My name is Lauren Armini and I'm Systemic Change Program Manager at Sisters of the Road. Although we consider issues of gun violence and houselessness to be emergencies, the abuse of emergency ordinances to force the rapid implementation of untested or reportedly harmful programs is extremely violent. The lack of transparency and community engagement in co-creating solutions at the city level this past year is alarming to say the least. We fear that allowing grant funding for programs like ShotSpotter to bypass City Council would bring these technologies into our communities without our consent. And the saying that this would not contribute to the funding of these programs feels very deceptive. This would definitely grease the wheels for this to happen. And I would also like to hear, what are these community initiatives that are actually increasing gun violence when people are saying gun violence has been increasing? How can you say that these programs are effective when we're not seeing a decrease in gun violence? For ShotSpotter in particular, there's an open letter to City Council by numerous organizations and individuals to stop its introduction into our city due to concerns about the numerous studies proving it to be ineffective and prejudicial. As with houselessness, gun violence is statistically shown to be reduced when people are well-resourced. If you want to reduce gun violence, prioritize early childhood support, well-staffed and free schooling ensure that every Portlander has good health care regardless of their housing status. Enforce rental caps, like 14% rent caps is not rent control. The process of approving grant funding through City Council was put in place for a reason. We need transparency and accountability from our city government now more than ever. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Nick Peterson.
Welcome, Nick.
Doesn't look like they've joined us. Next, we have Malaya Lualhalti.
Hi, my name is Malaya Lualhalti, and I live in Portland. I live in downtown Portland. And I wanted to speak about, I also wanted to say that I'm Filipina, and I wanted to speak about my concern about interest in increased surveillance and also possible use of ShotSpotter to address gun violence. And one of my biggest concerns about ShotSpotter is that it hasn't actually been tested independently for accuracy, and it's been shown to be inaccurate. So while the company claims 97% of accuracy, the MacArthur Justice Center studied over 40,000 dispatches in under a two-year period in Chicago and found that 89% of dispatches resulted in no gun-related crime and 86% resulted in no crime at all. Also, ShotSpotter has classified gunshots as real actual gunshots as helicopters, and then also has classified sounds from jackhammers as gunshots. So you could see how inaccurate that is. And I'm also concerned as a person of color living in Portland about possible racial bias in the way that these technologies are implemented, especially since ShotSpotter is disproportionately placed in communities of color rather than in communities where there are fewer people of color and more white people. And then also, there have been many cases where police departments in over 130 different cities in the United States have used ShotSpotter to support false claims, and then in turn, after requests from the police departments, ShotSpotter has manipulated its data. So thank you so much for your time and for listening to me. I would really like to see preventive measures for gun violence that are accurate and that are cost effective. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Angelica Aguilar.
Welcome.
And I don't think they've joined us, and that completes testimony.
Very good. Colleagues, any further questions at this point? Please call the roll.
Oh, wait, I had a question.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yeah. Thank you for being here, Director Myers. And back on topic, I know that when Commissioner Rubio and I brought this to the dais in April of 2021, it was to include community and community safety. And I'm thrilled with how on top of this you are and how you're working so closely. I've also had the pleasure of doing a couple ride-alongs with community groups that are doing this work in the late evenings. And I'm really found the relationship building that takes place between impacted communities and these community organizations to be at the very foundational level on how we can keep improving community safety. And so I just wanted to ask how you're measuring success when we do these grants, and what's the evaluation criteria? Just a little bit on that, please.
Yeah. So I think this is a common question. Commissioner, first of all, thank you for your question. And this is not a unique question. I get this question regularly on how we get our return on our investment with community-based organization work. I will tell you that the idea behind community investment to reduce gun violence is kind of framed up in four different areas. One is primarily prevention work. that is the bulk of what community organizations do. Some of our larger organizations are very, very good at that. It is very evidence-based. There's plenty of evidence out there that regular, consistent, fairly large-scale investment in prevention efforts within communities does work to keep gun violence down. The second area that you're probably familiar with is when gun violence does occur. Victims often show up at trauma centers. There's a potential there that the violence can continue. We want to break that cycle of violence, and we have individuals that respond, community-based organizations that respond to the hospitals, to funerals, to memorials, where other violence can occur. That is another area of investment that we are constantly investing in. A third area of investment, which is very important, and a lot of work needs to continue in this area, is when individuals that have committed a felony, committed murder, have been in jail and return out of jail into probation and parole and then released back into the community. They need an opportunity to survive, to find a way back into the community where it works for them and not pick up a handgun. And so we also invest in those opportunities for individuals that are reentering back into our community after they've been incarcerated. That's also a platform for investment. Our fourth one, however, is where we are finding the most success. We put the bulk, I would say the 90% of the money from Safer Summer PDX, if you recall that you voted on that early summer, that money goes to street level outreach workers. These are credible messengers. These are individuals that live in these communities, that know individuals that are possibly involved in carrying weapons and might possibly involved in shootings. And the idea here is that they can interact before they pull the trigger. And we invest heavily in that as well. So I believe through these four investments, Commissioner, that are all evidence-based, that ultimately we will be successful, but in combination with the work that the Focused Intervention Team does, that the ECST, the Enhanced Community Safety Team does, the work that Nate Takara does in the Street Services Coordination Center, and our place-based investments collectively will bring gun violence down. The police chief alone cannot bring gun violence down. Any one of these individual community-based organizations that we give money to alone cannot bring gun violence down. The Street Services Coordination Center, working with the houseless community where we have some gun violence involved and some of those bad encampments, can't bring gun violence down alone. But collectively together, that performance measure of reduced gun violence will collectively be impacted when all those things are working together.
Thank you so much. I'm curious, is there a learning community dialogue that takes place amongst the people who are on the street level outreach workers from the different organizations? Because when I just have done it twice, I just noticed there were some themes and I wondered if they had communication opportunity amongst themselves.
They do. They do have communication opportunities amongst themselves. We do host that platform that, first of all, they do know each other. This is a small community of individuals that regularly circulate amongst each other, but we offer that platform within the Community Safety Division for them to meet regularly and have open dialogue on what's working and what's not, who is overlapping work and who is not.
Very good. Any further questions? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
I'm really grateful to Director Myers and his team for this work and all their great work to ensure that our community-based organizations are supported and effective in this work to end gun violence in our communities. This violence prevention, continues to be a significant priority for us, and the organizations that are implementing these grants are culturally focused on providing preventative, culturally responsive programs to people within their communities. And I also want to thank you, Director, for your clarification that these funds would not be used to fund ShotSpotter, which would not be consistent with the intent of the grants and the programming that we envision. So thanks again for that clarification for us and for the community. And I also want to lift up Michelle's testimony about the need to focus and support in outer East Portland communities. I agree with this 100%, and this is what I will be looking for in these investments as we learn more about them in these neighborhoods, as well as I'll be also looking forward to learning more about the progress that these community-based organizations are making as the work continues. So we need to make sure that we can do all we can to support the work that is happening and that they've engaged in. They're doing a good job, and this is precisely the intent of these grants. So thank you again. And I'm happy to vote aye.
Ryan.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Director Myers, for being here today. And I really appreciate our dialogue. And I want to acknowledge the leadership of Commissioner Rubio. I remember when we had that conversation in the spring of 2021, both of us coming from community nonprofits and wanting to make sure that we could get investments into those communities so they could be part of this solution. I will say, you know, in my ride-alongs, they were in Old Town Chinatown and in Hazelwood predominantly. So I will say that I experienced those actual neighborhoods that were lifted by one of the testimony. I think we're on the right track. I like your stewardship of this program. I think it's only going to get better. And I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Director Myers and thank you, Lisa. I know you worked hard on this as well. And I want to thank my colleagues and their staffs for agreeing to hear this item on today's agenda. It goes without saying that all of us had made it clear that preventing gun violence is a priority for the community, and it's a priority for each of us on the City Council. Removing barriers to ensure that we can move quickly to get resources to community-based partners is essential to the success of our prevention efforts. This ordinance allows us to do so within reasonable limitation, and it helps us to continue the work towards these critical goals. I'm very happy to support this. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. We will now go back to, let's do item 947. This has been held open. Could you reread it just for the record, Keelan, and then call the roll?
Authorized competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest responsible bidder for construction of the Farragut Park Improvements Project for an estimated cost of $2,200,000.
Does anybody else have any further comments on this item? Please call the roll.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
I'd like to recognize and thank a Portland Parks and Recreation Project Management and Review Team led by Jill Hutchinson and the Consultant Design Team led by Greenworks for their excellent work and collaboration to bring this to fruition. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. The consent agenda, I understand item 942 has been pulled back to Commissioner Hardesty's office. Have any other items been pulled?
No.
Please call the roll.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. And that leaves us with what?
942.
The 942. But that's been referred back to the office, so we're not going to hear it today.
Right. Would you like me to read the title into
the
record?
Oh, yeah, please do. Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
She's except thorough. And, yes, indeed she is.
Accept and appropriate staffing for adequate fire and emergency response grant from the Department of Homeland Security to fund 6 Portland Fire and Rescue firefighters in the amount of $2,076,406.
Thank you. And that's been pulled back to Commissioner Hardesty's office. That completes our agenda for this morning.
It does.
Very good. We are adjourned.